So again, the key here is, you want to remember this when he deals with the wicked servant later. He gives what? According to each's ability. He was entrusted according to the ability the master saw to give. Okay, for us, Romans 12. Verse 3, for I say, through the grace given to me, to everyone who is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly or in the right mind, as God has dealt to each one a measure of faith. So as far as we're concerned, God gives in measure. And often that measure is by God looking at us and seeing what we're capable of being trusted with. Some people are trusted with more. Some cannot be trusted with more until they've proven loyal to what they've been given. And then God can give them more later. God can grace people more. I don't believe very few people are called with great ministries from the beginning. They may be told what it is, but obviously some of them take more time to work in the person and for God to take them to the cross for them to reach a certain maturity so they won't think of themselves as a novice will and come under judgment. A novice, again, is a person, a beginner, a new person who thinks he's more important than he is because he has no wisdom. See, a lot of novices have zeal and excitement, but that's not spiritual, you know. You know, you see a lot of children, they have all of this get up and go, and they want to do this, and they want to do that, and they never do it right. They just have zeal. And many times, or Christians are that way. They think they can be entrusted with more, and what's behind this is the flesh. What's behind this is spiritual pride. And so that's why the Scripture says, when we're given grace, we need to know. See, wisdom will teach us what we're accountable for, and we will not proceed to go beyond that. See, a lot of people try to proceed to move in something God has not called them for nor gifted them for. So that would be presumption. That would be pride, you know. As yet, some people think because they know the Bible or because they have a mental assent to Scripture that that makes them spiritual. That does not make you spiritual. That makes you more accountable. See, you have to be told facts before you can be conformed to the facts. So having the knowledge, see, this is what I find with many people over the 30 years I've been in this thing. You teach them one or two times, and then they come back, and I always get this through the grapevine. Well, he always repeats the same things. He always repeats the same thing. And I say, if you read what Jesus said in all the Bible, you can read it in an hour. You can read it in an hour. Do you think Jesus, everywhere he went, he came up with something new? He repeated the same parables everywhere he went. He didn't have much else to say. Why did he do this? Because people are stupid. And they won't do what they're told. And they want something else, and God don't want to give them anything else. He is not interested in giving you mental knowledge. Because it profits you nothing. Knowledge puffs up. Only wisdom can edify. Only wisdom can understand these things. So many people, he says, a little here, a little there, line upon line, precept to precept. And then he also said, but you would not listen. Oh, but I want something deeper. What do you want something deeper for? You're on your way to hell. You're as deep as you're going. You need to get out of that state of wickedness and understand your duty to God and stop being disobedient before you want to know the mysteries of the kingdom. See, that's nothing but pride. Many people who think they're spiritual are not. That's why they run from meeting to meeting. They're always looking for something new. Every wind of teaching, Paul called it, by the sleights of men. Ever learning, but never coming to the knowledge of the truth. Oh, they can quote the Scripture, and they've read this book, and they've read that book, but they don't go to the cross. And they don't obey the Lord when he deals with them in their personal life. Therefore, they don't need anything else. You're disobedient, you don't need to read one other fact about the Bible because it is going to do you a bit of good. And the worst it's going to do is judge you because you've not done what you've told to do. See, if people don't understand that. You cannot proceed. What did Hebrews will tell you that? It says, only the spiritually mature, those who have learned to discern between good and evil, those who've walked in it and understood the working of the Spirit to mature us, only those can go on to the deeper things. See? And what did Paul say to those who... He says, you have need of milk again. You've become dull of hearing. You ought to be teachers. He was saying, you ought to be mature Christians, and you have to go back to the milk now. And then he said, well, let us go on if God permits. God does not permit the novice to go on. God does not permit the baby Christian to go on until they've learned what the milk is. He does not allow the Christian to go into deeper ministry until he's faithful to what he's been given. See? Knowledge does not make a person spiritual. Knowledge makes people idiots. Because it's fleshly knowledge. It's not spiritual knowledge. Knowledge puffs up. It puffs up the old man. It puffs up the carnal nature. That's why even Paul said, look at your calling, brother. Not many knowledgeable are called. God doesn't mess with them. So you're going to try to figure God out from an intellectual standpoint cannot be done. God says, my kingdom is a spiritual kingdom, and you must be born again and walking in the spirit kingdom to understand spiritual things. There's black and white. They're totally different. You know? And even Paul said to the spiritual Christian, if you think you know, you don't know enough. See, wisdom says, I must go on. I don't get to this place and say, okay, I know it all now. You know? Then the scripture says you don't know enough. You don't know what's required of you. That more is going to be required of you because you know more. So again, people need to understand that God gives, not only to the believer, but he calls them and he tells them, I will give what I know they can be entrusted for. I'm not going to put on people what they cannot do. That's contrary to who God is. He cannot call into judgment people who are not morally accountable to him. But he knows who's morally accountable to him. And he knows every human has a conscience and has nature to look at and has a lot to instruct him if he'll be instructed. And has the lesser light even. Okay, in verse 6. Having then gifts differing according to the grace that is given us. So what is he saying over here? When he gave out the talents, the 5 talents, and the 2, and the 1, each one according to his own ability. See, even God does not give or increase ministry to people unless he sees the need, and then he gifts according. That's where ministries get their authority from. They understand what they're called for and where they're going to answer, and they stay in that area. They don't look at other people with a jealous and envious, oh, I wish I knew what that person knew. And sometimes God would say, no, because you'd be in hell now if you knew that, because you're not even obeying what I already gave you. So you don't want what this person has, because you're not faithful in what I've already given you. See, and then we say, oh, well, I don't think I want that yet. You know, it's this thing, too, is we have to watch envy and jealousy. You know, because again, it's like someone said, we do have the tendency at times to compare and think, you know, the water, the grass is always greener on the other side. And like someone said, yeah, but usually the water bill's higher. You don't know what that person has to bear and the accountability there. And that's why in James says, not many of you should become teachers. He accorded that as the greatest of ministries. Because see, prophecy and evangelism and pastoral, they are all teachers. And he was talking about the great accountability for those who God calls for this. And they're going to answer for more, for how they teach and how loyal they are to God and to his word. Okay, so again, according to their ability, God is not going to exact from people what he knows they cannot produce. It'd be contrary to his nature. It would make him a tyrant. It would make him unjust. And even Hebrews... talking about the believers that are being going through hard times, God said, Paul said, God is not unjust to forget the good works you show to the saints. He calls that for God to be unjust. You know, that if God's called you and graced you to do stuff and then he don't help you, he considers that being unjust of God, which he cannot be. Okay? So again, we see according to their own ability, and then he went on his journey. And he who had received the 5 talents went and traded with them and made another 5 talents. The key here is there was an increase. There was fruitfulness. See, Jesus said, I want you to bear fruit for the Father. And he also said, and that your fruit remain. See, it's not enough to bear fruit and then backslide. It's not enough to walk in the Lord and then walk back. I don't care what the little book talks about, you know, 3 steps forward and 2 steps back. Well, that's baloney. You know, you better keep going forward. You know, and that's what God requires. So again, he requires an increase. Why? Because his word does not return void, but it accomplishes what he sends it for. And if we do not increase spiritually and go on, it's a reflection of the Father. It's a reflection that we're not honoring him, and he's given us what's required, and it doesn't put God in a good light. And he does not like this. God's very careful about what his name is honored among people. And even Moses, when God was going to destroy Israel several times, Moses was smart enough to say, well, even though they're wicked and they deserve it, remember your name, Lord. See, he already knew the people deserved to be killed. They were so stiff-necked and rebellious, and God had kept putting up with them. A couple of times God said, stand aside, Moses, I'll kill them all, and I'll start over with you. It wouldn't have altered God's plan. And Moses gets out this out, and he, you know, and God knew what he would do. And he said, but what will the heathen say? That you weren't able to sustain your people? That you weren't able to give them the ability? Well, he knew he did, but God was very interested in his honor. So again, for the Christian not to bear fruit, the Father looks at it as an insult to Jesus, and he cuts the branch off eventually because it's insulted. He knows there's nothing wrong with the vine. Something's wrong with the branch, and it doesn't want to reflect its master or obey. So he has to deal with this. So what is he saying? There must be an increase. There must be fruitfulness. This is what we're talking about when we talk about works. Spiritual works is fruitfulness. Whether it's in your life or in ministry, they're tied up together. You cannot be a very fruitful Christian and bear the fruit of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, kindness, long-suffering, and yet go hide and never talk to a human being as long as you live. Because love also must give and help and represent God. See, it ain't just one side. Sometimes it's easier to avoid people. Now, if you're going to pray and intercede and you're going to wrestle with demons, that's another story. But if you're just trying to escape, you know, you're just being a coward. Again, we're not, our life is not to be hidden. You know, he calls us aside at times and gives us time to seek and be refreshed, to serve and to be a light. That is his purpose. So again, you cannot bear the fruit of the Spirit and be useless in the spiritual kingdom. It can't happen. Neither can you be ministering the gifts, the ministerial gifts and ministries, and not bear fruit. See, they're going to be all tied up together. You know. You cannot love without giving. And giving is a ministry. And you cannot give properly unless you love properly God and his people. So again, you see there, they're not separated. They go together. Often your life is the ministry. You know, at the minimum, we're going to see this. Okay? But he who received, and likewise he who had received 2, he gained 2 more. But he who had received 1 went and dug in the ground and hid his Lord's money. Back up for 1 minute. Verse 15. And to each according to his ability, and immediately he went on a journey. I like this. He went on a journey. You know, he didn't say, I'm coming back tomorrow. In his long-suffering and patience, he gave them time, you know, to deal with what he gave them. He didn't say, hurry up and do this, you know. He said, but when I come back, I expect something, you know, and there better be something when I come back. And we see the lesson, remember the fig tree. The master came 3 times, and he said, I find no fruit. Cut it down. He could wait it, didn't he? And Jesus extended that grace and said, well, give me 1 more season. and I will dung it and dig around it and water it. And then if it doesn't bear fruit, chop it down. So again, he wasn't in a hurry. But he was saying, but when I come, there better be fruitfulness. You know, it's inexcusable. And so this is what he's talking about. What did he do? He received and went and dug in the ground and hid his Lord's money. We have the implication here that he did this immediately. He didn't even bother to even consider what his master was requiring of him. You know, it may have been different if he'd done this after several years of working and trying and nothing panned out. We see his whole attitude was basically wicked in this. You know, he was told what? I'm coming back, and I expect this money to make something. And what did he do? He went and buried it. He knew in the ground it wasn't going to make nothing. It wasn't going to grow money trees. You know, he knew that. See, he had already planned in his mind, I'm not going to do what I'm told. See, he was already revealing there was some disobedience here. You know, and I will talk my way out of this. You know, somehow I'll get around this, he thought. But he who received the one went and dug it and hid his Lord's money. Notice it didn't say he hid his money. Whose money did he hide? The Lord's. See, it wasn't his, which meant you will answer and be accountable to me for this money. And he should have listened very well. And after a long time, again, the journey, he wasn't quick to judge. He is long-suffering and patient. He reproves and corrects and instructs. You know, we see God is not usually in a haste to judge. You know, he waits for things, or we'd all be dead and in hell. And after a long time, the Lord of those servants came and settled accounts with them. You can be guaranteed he's going to come and settle accounts one day. We'll find two scriptures. You'll find many. Let's go to two. You can either hold your place or go with me. Ecclesiastes again. Chapter 12. The last verses of the chapter. Look at 13 and 14. Speaks volumes here. One of my favorite scriptures. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. This is the wisest man who ever lived until Jesus came along. Was gifted in wisdom. And he wrote this in the Proverbs. And he's saying, after writing all of this, let me sum it all up. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. And the sad thing is Solomon didn't listen to his own wisdom. But he had it. He just didn't listen to it. He knew what was required. And he says, that's it. You can sum your whole life up in what? Fear God. That means to honor and obey him and respect him and keep his word. That's how you prove you love God. He says, that sums up your whole duty. And notice what he says. He doesn't stop there. For God will bring every work into judgment. It means everything you do in your life will be brought into judgment, including every secret thing. No one hides from God. There is no hiding from him. He sees all and will deal with all, whether it be good or whether it be evil. Simply says what? Men are going to give an account one day. Okay, you want to see again how it's going to be done? Go over to Revelation. Chapter 20. Verse 12, and I saw the dead, small and great, didn't matter who they were, standing before God's throne, and books were opened, and another book was opened, which is of life. And the dead were judged according to their works. Notice it didn't say according to their belief or their faith. By the things which were written in the books. What was the book of works? Everything they'd ever done. God had already says, I'm going to bring it all. You know, he's just using what? Something we can understand. See, God is not sitting up there 24 hours a day saying, oh, you did this and you did that. Like he's got this book because he can't remember. He's speaking in terms we can understand. We know what books are for records and things, and stewards keep records so the master can go over them and see what he's done. And so he's simply saying, you know, so you can understand this, I don't forget anything, you know. And one day when you stand before me, everything's going to be brought up. And where you spend eternity and your rank and file in heaven or hell will be determined by this, you know. So everything is going to be brought in to account. Okay, go back. So he came and settled accounts with them. He's calling them in to accountability, to judgment. So he who had received 5 talents came and brought 5 other talents, saying, Lord, you delivered to me 5 talents. Look, I have gained 5 more talents besides them. I think he said this with joy. It was like he knew the master would be pleased with him. Look what I've done, you know. You gave me this, and you expected me to produce something, and I did. And here's my basket of apples. You know, here they are. And notice what the Lord says to him. And his Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. Notice what he calls him. You're good. Why are you good? Because you did what I required of you. You obeyed your master. And you were faithful to obey him. So he's looking at this, you know. He looked at his attitude. He looked at what he did and what he produced. And he says, you've done well. Isn't it interesting? You don't find this word used often. And it's only used a few times. And a couple of those times is when the Lord spoke audibly to Jesus and said, this is my son, my beloved son, in whom I am well pleased. Not just pleased, but well pleased. And that's interesting that he uses the same words going to be said to those who cross over, you know. So it ain't going to be you barely did anything. It ain't going to be the statement made, okay? Notice what he says here. Enter in to the joy of the Lord. Why? Because now your reward comes. You've done what was required of you, and now I'm going to reward you for what you did. He is not unjust to forget what we do in his name. Every cup of cold water, every deed we do unto the Lord by the guidance of the Spirit and out of duty to God, he's saying, I won't forget it. Isn't it interesting? He will reward the wicked, but he chooses to reward the righteous also if they're loyal to him. That's his right, you know. And I think it's astounding because when we get to the section when we talk about, you know, when you've done all that's commanded you, since you say you're unprofitable servants, it means that's your duty. You know, even don't murmur and complain. You have a duty to God. And yet God says, when you do your duty, when you do what's required of you, I'm still going to reward you. You know, I want you to do it, and you better do it. But I will reward you. But if you don't do it, you know, you have a duty to answer for. And that's what he's going to show us here. And he that had received the 2 talents, he came and said, Lord, you delivered to me 2 talents. Says the same thing. Look, I have gained 2 more talents before. Notice he makes the same statement. The master says nothing less to him. Why? Because he only gave him 2. He gave the other 5. He made no, see, well, he knew what he was accountable for. And he didn't say anything else. You know, he didn't say you've done less than the one before you. See, he knew the abilities and what he'd given, and that's how he was going to answer. And he said to him, well done, good and faithful servant again. You have been faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of the Lord. It's interesting that God looks at it as if we only have to be faithful in a few things compared to eternity. You only have to be loyal for a small time. That's why Paul could say, the sufferings of this age are not worthy to be compared to what shall be revealed in us. Okay, so you suffer 10, 15, 20 years for the Lord or longer. You suffer with grace. God says, I'll even give you ability to do that. You know, but look what you get in the long run. Eternity never stops. You know, and these things will never come to your mind. You'll look at this as if that was the drop in the ocean compared to eternity. So he's saying, all you have to be faithful is a few things. See, he's not put a big burden. That's why Jesus said, you know, his yoke is easy. and his burden is light. See, people say, but it's so hard. Yes, for the wicked and the backslidden and the carnal and those who don't want to serve the Lord, their way is always hard. And the double-minded and the self-centered, they can't serve God. What does the scripture say? When the backslider is filled with his own ways, his heart rages against the Lord. See? Because he sees things from an evil perspective. And this is what we're going to see about the unfaithful messenger or servant here. He sees things with an evil eye. Verse 24. Then he who had received the one talent came and said. What did he receive? He was given the least responsibility of all of them. Why? The master over here said, according to his own ability. The master didn't give him no more. Maybe he looked at him and said, well, he can take one. Or he wouldn't have given him that. But he said, yeah, I expect him to take care of this. And he was being, in a sense, we would say, look how gracious he was. He didn't put a lot on him. You know, he just gave him one thing and said, bear something. And notice what he says to him. Lord, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. He's immediately started to distort what was given to him. The master had already said he gave according to their ability. So this statement was a lie. He was saying, you expect too much of me, God. You know. And I decided from the beginning that I ain't going to do this. And I'll just go bury it. And I'll give you back your money. Well, see, the master had already told him he was looking for an increase. And if he knew he was hard, see, he's going to see where the judgment comes on him. He's actually trying to put the blame on God. He's actually trying to turn, as if he's going to judge the master. See, that's the terrible thing is, he's actually, when he answers, he's actually insulting the master and trying to turn the tables on him. Well, the reason I didn't do this is because of you. You know, it's almost again, isn't it? It's like Adam all over again, isn't it? The woman that thou gavest me, that you gave me, God, you gave me the woman. Like it's your fault that I sinned, because you gave me the woman. And when she gave me the fruit, I did eat. And the woman, real quickly, she caught on. She did learn something from her husband, real quickly. But the serpent, he tricked me. He caused me to forget. And I did eat, but notice what she was doing. She was still trying to cast blame on the serpent instead of saying, I'm guilty. See, what were they both saying when they sinned? They were afraid of God, same as this servant. Something in him stirred. Well, if I can cast doubt on him, how can he judge me? You know, if I can make him look like he's the terrible one, well, what did you expect, God? But see, God don't fall for it. Why? Because he don't believe lies. And he knew the truth, and he knew the servant, and he knew what he was capable of. So he was saying what? I was not hard. I was not exacting. I gave you something small that I knew you could do. But you chose not to. Okay? And notice what he says here. And I was afraid. Isn't this the first thing that happened to Adam and Eve? Anytime sin comes in the picture, you will see people are afraid. They have a right to be. When they face a judge, and God in judgment, and they're wrong, and they're sinners, they have a right to be afraid. And Adam and Eve, instinctively, that was the knowledge they got from the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Nobody told them flee and hide from God. When they sinned, their corrupt nature told them, I cannot stand in this person's presence that usually comes and meets me every day in the cool of the day. Every day they were used to running to meet the Lord in whatever form he took. But this day after they sinned, when they heard the Lord coming, they hid. Isn't it interesting? They instinctively knew what? Without knowledge, direct verbal knowledge, their nature told them, I am to be afraid of God because judgment has come into play. The wicked flee. See? They hide. So they have a right to. And it was God who said to them what? And they said, where are you, Adam? Like he didn't know where they were at. And they said, well, we were afraid. And we hid, for we were naked. And what does God say? Who told you you were naked? The devil didn't tell them. God didn't tell them directly. What told them? Their conscience has been enlightened to the wrong degree because of their sin. And it told them, be afraid because you've done something bad. And then he proceeds to pronounce the judgment on him. So we see that this guy, when he stood, he's saying the same thing. I was afraid of you. Immediately after you told me what I was going to have to do, I decided not to do it. And I had all of these reasons. But see, we're going to see they did not pan out. But his Lord answered and said to him, "You wicked and lazy servant." Wicked and lazy. Notice he doesn't say good and faithful. He says, "You're wicked." Why are you wicked? Because you lie about me. You say things about me that are not true. You twist things. You would see, that was actually, to a degree, is why God came down and spoke roughly to Job. Remember when he reproved him for his, he called God into question and set himself up to judge God and demanded that God come down and give an account of himself. And how dare you do this to me? And God came down and he started answering questions. Asking questions. And as soon as Job started repenting real quickly, God said, "But I'm not finished. You stand up like a man and answer me." You know, and Job got real quiet. And he started to proceed. "How dare you question? I can do as I please. I'm God." You know. And so we see, he says, "You wicked and lazy servant. You knew that I reaped where I had not sown and gathered where I had not scattered." He's saying, if that's your concept of me, if that's how you saw me, then why did you hide it? You knew if I was hard, and if you considered me this way, then you should have had something ready for me. That was your concept, then you should have feared me. Why have you brought me nothing? If I'm such a tyrant, you're telling me that I am, then how dare you come before me empty? You know? So he's actually answering him according to his own judgment. And what does he say to him? "Therefore, you ought to have deposited my money with the bankers, and at my coming I would have received back my own with interest." What was he saying? I demanded an increase, and you could have done that. And even if you were really afraid and you didn't think you could have done anything and you thought that you had no ability, you still could have taken the money and put it in the bank and it drew interest instead of burying it in the ground where it did nothing. See? So he was saying, you could have done the minimum, you know, and I knew you had the ability. You didn't even have to bring back a talent for it. You could have had the interest, and I would have accepted it, you know. And so again, he says, what then? So we need to understand, and I hear this with Christians many times, you know, when they say they don't have certain abilities and they can't do this. What they're saying is, I see a lot when people... what they're saying is, if I can't have a big ministry, then I'm really not that interested. There's a lot of it's pride. If I can't be the head, then I'm not going to be the foot. I remember a woman one time, we may not finish on the tape, but we're going to go on anyway. I remember a woman one time, 20-some years ago in a church I was in, and she used to yell and talk in tongues more than everybody and shout and carry on. And I remember one time, I was young in the Lord, I'd only saved about a year and a half. And I remember getting in the car, getting a ride with her and someone, and she was supposed to be so spirit-filled. And the first thing she said was, I could tell she was upset about something. Someone had really treated her bad. Someone had really done something. And she said and turned back there and looked at me, and I never forgot it. She said, "If I can't be a tablecloth, I'm not going to be a dish rag." And I thought, why should I keep it? You know, and all of a sudden it was like the Lord opened my eyes. She's the one who stood down in the front of the church every Sunday night and screamed in tongues and praised the Lord and made the biggest noise. And everybody knew what she was like. I mean, so she didn't, that wasn't a revelation for me. And everybody else sort of looked at it and sort of grinned like, you know, here she thought she's impressing everybody and she's so close to God and all of this. Nobody was impressed. She just deceived herself. And she was saying, if I can't be the best and be God's special servant, then I won't be nothing. And this is sort of what the talent, the guy with the one talent, you know. If I can't be entrusted with more, and if I'm not that important, then it ain't important to me. You know, but he didn't understand he was going to answer for this. You know, see, that was the thing he didn't understand. God may not have called her to be a tablecloth. Maybe he did call her to be a napkin or a dish rag. And she should have been a good one. And if she had been a good napkin, God may have used her for a tablecloth later. But she proved she couldn't even be a good napkin. And see, that's a lot of people, why they never are promoted by God, why they never go on. They always have aspirations of something greater, and they're not faithful to what they have. And then they wonder why God's not interested in taking them anywhere. They haven't even learned to occupy where they're at. They've been faithless. They've been useless. And somehow people have this tendency, but, oh, if God entrusted me with this great thing, I'd really do a good job. And I've told many of the people, you're a liar, and the truth's not in you because you're not doing a good job now. And God says you're a liar. Oh, but you don't know. Yes, I do know. Because Jesus himself said, you have the law and you have the prophets. And if you won't obey them, you won't obey even though one raised from the dead. If you're not faithful what God's given you, don't you dare ever think of getting anything else. Because God isn't thinking of giving you anything else. He's thinking of judging you for not being unfaithful to what he's already given you. That's why many people never go on. And they end up backsliding. Because if they can't be the best, well, they'll just live their own life. And God says, yes, you will. But remember, I'll call every work into judgment. Okay, quickly, Matthew 10. I say this to myself and I say this to Christians. If you're not called for greater authority, don't worry about it. You better be faithful what you're given. 10, look at 41 to 42. He who receives you receives me, and he who receives me receives him who sent me. He who receives a prophet in the name of a prophet receives a prophet's reward. He who receives a righteous man in the name of a righteous man receives a righteous man's reward. And whosoever gives one of these little ones only a cup of cold water in my name as of a disciple, truly I say, he shall by no means lose his reward. Simply saying, if you're not called to great ministry and you don't think you have anything, you have the ability to help those who are and those who are called. You have the ability to have the ministry of helps. All Christians have that. All Christians have the ministry of helps and giving. There's no way you cannot have it. That's the least. That's the one talent you're given. And so for a person to say they don't have any, they're a liar. And God's going to call them into account. Because he's told them that we have. 1 Corinthians, real quickly. Chapter 12, verse 28. And God has appointed these in the church. First in authority, apostles. Second in authority, prophets. Third in authority, teachers. After that, miracles, gifts of healings, helps. This includes all the little stuff that nobody knows nothing about. It includes all the other ministries that aren't spoken. Because everybody's given a talent. Everybody's given some accountability. One more. 1 John 3. Shows you where you cannot separate ministry gifts, any kind of ministry, from the fruit of the Spirit. John will make it very plain to you. 1 John 3, 16 and 17. By this we know love, because he laid down his life for us. And we ought also to lay down our lives for the brethren. You can always help the brethren of any station above you. If you help them, you're helping the ministry of God. That's what he's saying. See, and notice what he says. But whosoever has this world's goods and sees his brother is in need and shuts up his heart from him, how does the love of God abide in him? It's a rhetorical question. It cannot. He's saying what? That every believer has the ability to give. Every believer has the ability to help. Okay, I go back. Therefore, take the talent from him and give it to him who has 10 talents, the one who invested the most and was trusted with the most. For to everyone who has, more will be given, and he will have abundance. But from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken from him. This is the law of grace. Grace and justice. Grace not used, it means more punishment comes into play. See, those who are given more will answer for more. But if they're faithful, they get more rewards. And if they're unfaithful, they answer, and what they have will be taken from them. It's responsibility. That's fairness, isn't it?